What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of the Mongols podcast. I'm Mike. With me is Kev and Josh. Coming up, we're going to break down the Hounds 2-1 win over FC Montreal. I know, we won. Let's go!
Can you believe that, guys?
No, I mean, that is one of the craziest sequence of events we've seen in quite a period of time.
In the top right corner, gentlemen. Out to the middle, back to
guys, we won. We won.
Woo. Finally.
Oh my we God. Won. Yeah, I know. So there are more talking points than we really have time for. So we're actually going to try to mix it up a little bit in this episode, where really we're just going to go around the table and each of us is going to take turns bringing up things that we thought were interesting and we'll just discuss them and then we'll sort of move on to the next person and see how much of this stuff we can get through. Because like I said, after watching this game, there was sort of there was a cornucopia of topics that I thought we could go through, and let's just do it. So the Hounds got their first win in the Dave Brandt era, only the second win this season. It was a 2-1 win over Montreal. We got goals from Kevin Kerr and Corey Hertzog, both of which were fantastic in their own right. Josh, you were there. Start us off, man. What do you want to talk about?
Yeah, let's actually start with the goals. I want to start talking about the Kevin Kerr goal. I thought it was kind of neat to see. It was Jack Thompson, who slotted the ball to Kerr, and it made it look easy. I mean, Kerr just kind of like dribbled it in almost and just kicked it right over the defense and got it in. And I just don't know what you guys were thinking as far as the goal itself. Like, do you feel like that was what we're going to be seeing more of? Is that what we should expect? Like, Kevin Kerr being the one doing the goals? Like, that was what surprised me.
Usually he's the one.
But to be fair, he's usually the midfield. He's usually the one that's distributing the ball, not the one putting it in the back of the net. So it was weird to see him being the guy on top instead of the guy in the middle slotting the ball in.
Yeah, I agree. I thought Kevin had a really good game today, and you're right, it did look very easy.
He said it was the easiest goal he would ever have this whole
But at the same time, I actually thought Kerr's finish was pretty well taken. I mean, it wasn't like an open net that he just kind of slotted in. He was still kind of one-on-one with the keeper, and you know, he was able to lift it up and put it in the corner. I thought it was a tidy finish. I was really happy to see that Thompson was the one who kind of slid him in. I thought Thompson was lively all game. I don't know. I mean, I tend to think that we probably will see more of this under a Coach Brandt kind of system where you get midfielders, running beyond the forward and trying to, you know, make runs off the back line, off the shoulder of their last defender. I hope so at least. But no, I thought, yeah, it was a really well taken goal. I will say we were chatting a little bit before the podcast. Kevin had a great game, but I'm still gonna say it's a goal in 10 games. He's played 10 games this season. One goal. If he's on this pace, it's like 3 goals this season. 3 or 4 goals.
Ooh, throwing some shade.
He did have an assist today. Like I said, he's a great player. I would start him every week.
Are you just trying to make yourself the more prominent Kevin in Pittsburgh? Is that what's going on here?
Like,
is this a name thing?
Left out, and I'm jealous. He's a great player. He had a great game.
I think it was, he didn't have to rip the ball. I mean, literally, it was just a nice little chip. It looked like, on the replay at least, the goalie was almost falling over when Kevin took the shot. And I think part of that had to do with, I think Boggs was on the back post. And so the keeper was trying to acknowledge the fact that Boggs was there and could make the pass. But yeah, you know, Josh, to your point, it looked like one of the easiest goals Kevin may ever get. He just sort of walked in and just popped it up over him. And Kevin, to your point, I think I made note of this. We lined up in a 4-3-3, but there were a number of times that Kevin Kerr was the furthest guy up the field. There were a few times that I was like, what is Mike Green doing as the furthest guy up the field? It seemed that the midfield and the forwards were sort of just fluidly rotating. So it was almost like we had a 4-6 than it was a 4-3-3. So whether or not we may see more of Kerr popping up into those situations, he's always been sort of this like sneaky player to me, where he is either coming late or he's just popping up out wide, where players aren't expecting him.
I think he naturally kind of goes hiding for moments in games, and then he'll pop up, have a big five, and then kind of go hiding again. I mean, and I think just by his nature of being like that, then, you know, that kind of allows him the opportunity to kind of, you know, pop up into space where no one's picking him up, and, you know, he finds himself in a bunch of space and you don't really know why, and he doesn't even understand why, but he gets the ball and he usually makes good play. Yeah, I don't know. And so, yeah, no, he had a good game. He had good moments. I'm going to stop talking about Kevin Kerr because I don't know what else I can say.
Just going to dig that hole a little bit deeper. To your point, though, Mike, about people kind of moving up the field a lot more than you would expect, Willie Hunt was also another one. You saw him coming up the right-hand side repeatedly and just being the furthest guy forward. I was really surprised by that.
Yeah, what are you guys' thoughts on the whole formation about putting Hunt at right back? I don't know. Yeah, what do you guys think? For me, I'm a little worried. I certainly don't think it's a long-term solution. Do you think it was something that Brandt wanted to do just for this game, potentially, or?
Brandt had made some comments before the game about some players sort of lacking fitness, lacking heart, and I think his one comment was like, take that however you want. When I think the question that came up was specifically about the first half subs in the last game, which I believe was Okai and Russell. And so he said, obviously you don't want to make those first half subs, but something had to be done, and specifically called out fitness and heart. So I wasn't terribly surprised to see Hunt out on that right side. And there were a few games last year where he played out wide, to the point that I don't want to say I was surprised when he started at center back at the beginning of the season. I was a little bit surprised because we've talked about this before. The Hunt-Campbell pairing has been really good all season. And so to break that up, I thought was interesting. But at the same time, I thought Willie did a really good job of getting up and back, and he still had that tenacity when he got back to take players on. And I thought he did a really good job out wide. I think that the center back pairing now, I think there's going to, if it's going to be Carsten Smith, there's going to be they're going to need time to develop the chemistry between Campbell and Smith. And there were a few times that Smith made a few errors that I think were indicative of him being new to that pairing. And there were a few times that Campbell and Smith were sort of talking to each other, like trying to get on the same page. But I think if that can work out, you know, Smith is another tall guy to play next to Campbell, which would be good to have in center back. And if you keep Willie on the back line and he's still able to get into the attack, then all the better.
And to be fair, I mean, when you sign nothing but midfielders, some of those midfielders are going to have to go back. So, you know, well, it's going to have to happen. I mean, that's pretty much, what do we have now? How many midfielders on the roster? Pretty much lot. Over half the team is
a
midfielder.
Say, I feel like 75% of the team is midfielders. Yeah.
By the way, I got really excited because I don't think I've really seen Smith play that much this season, unless I missed something and you guys have seen him. I don't know. But I got really excited when I saw him. I was like, this guy looks massive, and this is going to be awesome.
You just like his man bun. Calm down.
He's a big guy. I mean, look, like, if I was a forward, I wouldn't want to play against him. You know what I mean? It's one of those kind of things. And, I thought he definitely had a shaky game. I don't know. I mean, maybe he starts to bed in a bit more if he just gets more playing time next to Campbell. But I thought Smith had a tough game against a relatively weak Montreal side. And I don't know, that's slightly worrisome because I think Smith and Branson are probably our two backup center backs. And so if Campbell or Hunt go down, I mean, you know, Campbell had that nasty injury at the end, which could have been, you know, long-term on the sidelines. You know, we're looking at a situation where, you know, I'm not too comfortable with our back four. Make this immediate jump where I actually think we have a pretty solid back four right now. And the real issue is just getting the midfield to defend. Where, and one injury away from having a very, very kind of, you know, flipped defense.
I mean, you saw that last game. Campbell wasn't in the last game, and we saw what happened in that game. So, yeah, you're completely right. It's kind of shaky right now in the back line as far as, you know, if any one of them gets hurt, it's not looking too good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we're definitely lacking depth in defense and at forward, but not so much midfield, as we just said.
Yeah.
Okay, so this was actually one of the points I wanted to bring up, and unless someone else had a burning thing they wanted to discuss.
Go for it, Kev. We're sort of floating all over the place anyway, so this is fine. Go for it.
So, okay, I want to caveat this with Herzog. I think he has tons of talent. He's a really good person. We've interviewed him. He's an awesome guy. And so I this is kind of a tongue-in-cheek line I wrote down in my notes here that I want to discuss. But I want to discuss, is Herzog any good? Like, I don't know. Like, because, so this is 2 goals in 2 games. The goal he scored today was brilliant, in my opinion. And he's getting in these situations where, I mean, he's getting in the chance, he's getting in the positions where I could see him score 5 goals a game. And they're clear-cut chances. I think there was one, I don't know if it was at the end of the first half or the beginning of the second half, he had an unmarked free header,
yeah,
like 5 yards out, and he just put it wide. And so I can't decide if, like, he's great or he's not great. I don't know. I'm the verdict's out for me on Herzog. But it's good to score. It's good to see him at least score today with a good goal.
The note that I made is that he makes the difficult goals. He scores the difficult goals, but misses the easy ones. To your point, there were at least 5 or 6 times in this game, he gets himself in that position where you want your forwards to be to get the ball, and he's just not finishing it.
And to that point, though, I'm wondering if the reason why he hasn't, or that we notice it really in this game, is because he got so many more chances than he has in the past. I feel like in this game, we really got to see that the midfield is doing a good job of slotting the ball forward, and he had a lot more opportunities. Now, like you said, he did miss most of those opportunities. But, I mean, he hasn't really had those opportunities in the past, I don't feel like, as far as those clear-cut opportunities like in this game. Yeah, it's just his consistency. I mean, that's what I had written down, actually, was consistency. Like, you would think, you know, training more, they would be able to do more of the goals, but... Yeah.
In terms of, you know, I'm used to watching sort of MLS and higher level soccer where you pay your top strikers and their job is to do nothing but bury the ball. Is there 5, even 10 players in the USL when we look around that are those kind of clinical finishers that every time they get the ball's in the back of the net? I feel bad because, Kev, to your point, we've talked to Corey. Corey seems like a great guy. I don't want to bash him. And it's clear that he's putting in the time. He's working overtime. He's refining his shot. He's constantly chasing after balls. He's one of my favorite players just from showing and the work and putting in the effort and all of that. So you feel for the guy. But is this a result of him just not being able to put the ball in the back of the net? Or is this more indicative of just the talent level in the USL overall? Where we could expect a few more goals from him, but we also can't expect that, you know, 75% of the time when he gets the ball on his foot, he's going to rip it on frame.
And while you're talking there, I was trying to find the numbers of, like, the top goal scorers in the USL. I'll find that at some point, and I'll bring that up. But actually, I mean, yeah, going back to what, Josh, you were talking about with Corey, I completely agree with you that I think consistency is his big problem. And I'm just hoping that even though, you know, he missed some big chances this game, this is 2 goals in 2 games for him.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that he's starting to get back on the horse. I mean, I think it says a lot about a player who can score that kind of goal, and then, which is a really well taken goal, and then miss, it was at least 1 or 2 clear-cut chances, and he kept putting himself in the position after that. He didn't go hiding in the game. He didn't slump down. He didn't not show for the ball. He keeps going, and he keeps trying to get himself in that position, and I'm hoping that will allow him to work his way out of it, and these 2 goals in the past 2 games are going to help, hopefully kind of help him out of this, bad
this
form
funk.
He's in.
Yeah, and we have seen this in the past because, to Mike, your point, we have had goal scorers that are just the clear goal scorers on USL teams in the past. I mean, obviously, Robbie Vincent would be one of them. And for Orlando, before they made the jump up, Dom Dwyer was playing in the USL, and he was a clear goal scorer. I mean, we've had these flashes of, you know, a star goal scorer in the past in USL.
So, Kev, I pulled up the stats.
You just beat me. I have it right here, too.
just to run it down. So, the leading goal scorer right now is Jack McBeam in L.A., and he has 12 goals in 14 games.
Wow.
Yeah. Under him is Chandler Hoffman in Louisville, who has 10 in 13 games. And then, really, let's see. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8... eight players with six or more goals. So basically averaging at least one every two games.
And by the way,
and then there's a cluster at five and a cluster at four.
To look at our numbers here, this blew me away. So I was looking at our stats. Only two Riverhounds players have more goals this season than Robbie Vincent scored for us. So Robbie Vincent, who has played not even a full game.
Yes.
He has the same or equal amount of goals as everyone in our squad except two other Riverhounds players.
You mean in a Riverhounds jersey this season?
Yes, yeah. In a Riverhounds jersey this season.
So really, Kevin's just trying to bring us down on this great win we just had. Just, hey, guys, we won. No, just, guess what? Things look, are still
I,
not
you know what,
great.
And I thought about that as I was thinking through my notes. You know, I did note that I had a lot of kind of nitpicky stuff. I thank you for bringing that up because I do want to caveat this. This win is great. Like, this is a win's a win. This was desperately needed. I was extremely happy when we got the win. I was looking forward to the podcast and all of this stuff. So regardless of all this crap that I'm talking about, this was a good win.
Now, I'm going to go ahead and play devil's advocate here. How much of this win was us, and how much of the win was the fact that we're playing Montreal?
See, I don't care. I don't care about that at all. I thought about this, Mike, because honestly, we've won one game, and so I don't care if they were down to six men.
Well, okay,
and
let me rephrase this, and we won.
That we need to start winning games, and we did.
Let me rephrase this. I totally agree. We need to start winning games. Did we see a progression in the team that makes us feel confident that going into Rochester next week, we may give ourselves a shot, Josh?
I'm going to say yes, because, yeah, remember, we lost against the Lansdowne boys. This is a team that lost against a bunch of construction workers who were smokers after the game. They were lighting up cigarettes and smoking outside. This team has gotten better. So, yes, I mean, granted, it was Montreal, but you can only beat the team that's on the field, and that's who they had in front of them, and they beat them. So that's great.
And even, I mean, to the progression point, I'm just going to go back to exactly what is that. At this point, I don't know. I care less about progression right now. And we need to get numbers on the board, mainly because I think our biggest problem is confidence. And the only way we work ourselves out of a confidence rut is by putting points on the board and by learning how to win and being ruthless and blah, 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 all this kind of stuff I've been talking in the past. So, yeah, I agree. I think we have seen some progression, but whatever, we got the win. That's what I'm happy with.
And I mean, the one thing we can hang our hats on was we had 14 shots, six of those on goal. And I don't know. I mean, I haven't gone back and looked at the stats. I don't feel like we've had 14 shots on goal like the past four games combined.
Yeah, it's almost guaranteed that that's probably more than we've had in at least three or four games.
Yeah, we came out firing, especially in like the first 4 minutes. It felt like we had like three or four scoring chances. So we definitely took it to them. Mm-hmm. Which is good. I had a couple notes here, but before the game started, it was announced that Nick Thompson, who is brother of Jack Thompson, older brother of Jack Thompson, was signed this week, which I was joking around on Twitter that Nick needs to come on the show, and he said he wants to come on the show. So we're going to try to line that up. I immediately started thinking of Thompson and Thompson references from Tintin for anybody who's a fan of those comics. We might have to do something fun with that. And
it's also
maybe
the Thompson Twins, by the way, the music band, I think, or like that.
Oh, yeah.
They played the song. They actually played the song during the game, which I thought was
Oh, hilarious. Did they really? Yeah. I think there's a lot of YouTube opportunities here for the Hounds to take advantage of Thompson and Thompson. So, but weird enough, I shouldn't say weird enough, you know, Thompson, the elder Thompson, Nick, had actually been out of playing since like 2011.
Yeah.
He had played under Coach Brandt at Messiah for 2 years. And then he actually went and was coaching. He was assistant coaching. He actually volunteer coached with Brandt at Navy for a year. And yeah. And so after being out of the game for 4 years, Coach Brandt was confident enough in him to say, hey, let's bring you out of retirement and get you in the game.
This kind of concerned me when I first heard about this signing. The fact that he hasn't played pro in over 4 years, the fact that last time he did play pro for the Carolina Railhawks, I believe, was only for a couple games, from what I understand. It wasn't like he was like playing a whole season with them. And then to top it all off, the connection with Brandt at Messiah, it felt like maybe this could be a signing that was just more of a friend of a friend type of thing. But he did come on, and he did do a couple things as soon as he got on the
pitch. He should have picked up a yellow, in my opinion.
He got a yellow card right off the bat, and then he got another foul that probably should have been a yellow card, which kind of concerned me. So, but he is definitely a big guy, and it looks like he could be a brute in the middle, like kind of a good, just a person to do that for us.
Yeah, two things I thought on Nick. One, I thought immediately, I didn't know it was like there was a shot. I was watching the stream of it, and there was a shot down the sideline of this person warming up, and he looked exactly like Gerard Piqué from Barcelona. I was like, how did we get this signing? This is great.
Yeah.
So I love his look, great look. But so yeah, I was thinking about this.
This is now a fashion show.
I mean, you know,
we love your look. Got great it. Look.
But no, but following along with your thought line, Josh, I thought the same thing. And so I started kind of questioning, okay, like, so why did he get signed? Why did Nick Thompson get brought in? And I tend to think, yeah, it's maybe one of two options. One of it is this kind of friend of a friend, Brandt Messiah connection thing, in which case that's, I don't know. I think the other option is... you know, I've talked about in the past how I felt like we maybe lack a little bit of leadership and kind of experience out, especially in like the middle of the pitch. And this is a guy who has been coaching for 4 years. I mean, so obviously he wasn't brought in because, you know, look, I'm sure he's a great player. I actually kind of liked what I've seen from him, but he wasn't brought in because he was a good player, because he hasn't been playing for four years. He was brought in for probably, my guess is, like a footballing intelligence. And so, I don't know, I'm kind of seeing, I'm wondering if Brandt is almost thinking of Nick being like a second coach out on the field during the game, who can kind of carry out instructions maybe a bit better, who can kind of talk other players through the game, because he obviously has the experience coaching other players. And so hopefully, maybe now he can just do that on the pitch.
I mean, I think one of the things that we didn't ask Jack was the whole fitness question. If he said, okay, I'm going to step away from the game for a year, and all of a sudden it's like, okay, now you're back, you're training with the team, we're just going to throw you in. It's one thing to sort of have the intelligence. It's also another thing to have the fitness to play at this level. I think what's interesting with Nick is, Kev, I agree with you, the fact that he has coached, you know, sort of stepping away from playing and sort of being a coach myself, it gives you a completely different perspective of what's going on in the game. Sometimes you can get lost in the game as a player. And this gives you sort of that next level sort of chess type mentality of putting the pieces together and understanding where you need to be. It's kind of like players who, like youth players, who go from always playing to then playing something like FIFA. And they sort of see the higher level view of the game, and they understand connecting passes and all of that, and that helps to take their game in the next level. I think that that may be what Nick is about, and I think that the two fouls that he took seem to be more of a out of position sort of thing, like trying to make up for it. And so that's why he sort of took the fouls, and there were a number of times that he sort of got beat, and I think it was more of a fitness thing. But there were times where he was calling out to other players, like, this is where you need to be. I think it is more of a, these are guys that know Brandt's system to a T, and they're going to help be in positions that maybe where other players aren't getting in right now and help move the team along.
I would think that maybe one thing to be concerned about with this would be the veteran players who have been with the Riverhounds for a while having, you know, first Jack Thompson, now Nick Thompson coming in and it feeling kind of like this is now their team. This is now, you know, they're I wonder if there's any concern about pushing out the old players or if they're on board with this and, you know, it is more of a binding the team together, and especially with Nick being a veteran and beyond to kind of be more of a forward thinking person on the field, or if there's any resentment to that. That's my only concern.
I mean, I don't want to say that, you know, winning heals all. I mean, I think if they win out the rest of the games,
it heals a lot.
Players are going to be happy. It heals a lot. But, no, I mean, one of the things, and it wasn't emphasized in Coach Brandt's initial press conference, was the fact that these aren't his guys. And coming in midseason, you can't pick your guys. It's mm-hmm. the team that you have.
I mean, and the other thing is... Now this is a bit different for the more experienced players that have been around the squad for a while, but the fact is, I mean, the start of the season wasn't good enough. So I mean, I feel like none of these players can say, "Oh no, hang on, like I deserve to be in the starting 11." No one really deserves to be in the starting 11 pre-Brandt when he came in, for at least in my opinion, for the performances mm-hmm. they're putting out there. So. I mean, yeah, I think there's always a danger of a kind of butting of heads between new regimes and old regimes, and you know, how does the new manager see me, and how do I fit into his new system, and yeah, I have no idea about how those things kind of play out behind the scenes. Hopefully it goes in a positive direction, but
it could be a psychological move too. It's hey. Here's this guy who hasn't played in 4 years, and I'm bringing him in and giving him time over some other players. So,
ouch.
Like, what is that? Yeah, like, what does that mean? Like, maybe you need to step up your game in practice, or mm-hmm. show up a few minutes early, or something. Like, prove me wrong here.
Oh, by the way, I mean, you know? I didn't see or hear those comments, Mike, you were mentioning that Coach Brandt made after the last game about like lack of heart or whatever. That's a massive shout to make about your players yeah. in public. That I mean, that's yeah. seriously. I mean, you don't see that like in any other sport. And usually that stuff will happen in the locker room behind closed doors. To have a manager who's been here for 3 games, now 4, say those things about. I mean, that yeah, it's a massive statement. So yeah, I mean, I think if one thing we can kind of take away from all this, I don't think Brandt's going to be scared to make a couple people mad. So.
Yeah.
To switch gears a little bit, we didn't really talk about Vargas at all. What did you guys think? I mean, I you know, I'm a huge Vargas fan, but I didn't think this was his best game. That one goal that he let in kind of felt like that could have been savable.
Well, and the lead up to the goal, I made a note of this, was a goal kick that went not really that far mm-hmm. and was basically intercepted. And came right back in, and it was a flub by Carson Smith. But I made a note here about the goal kicks and set pieces are almost automatic turnovers. I mean, I think from a save perspective, I felt like he did a decent job. The goal was tough. I mean, the guy banked it off the far post. So, I mean, he would have had to get all the way across to save that. Do I think he was savable? Yes. Do I think that it's 100% on him? No. Mm-hmm. But I still think that, and we saw this with Gilstrap as well, when the goalies are playing the ball out. Mm-hmm. Now, I don't think any went straight out of bounds.
No, not this game.
But not this game. But multiple times when Vargas was punting the ball, it would get all the way down to the other end to the other team's goalie, and then they would basically just start over with the ball. Or if it was a goal kick, it was either not connecting with one of our players, or for the first few goal kicks, it was literally going short. I remember one in particular, their forward, was in our half, and he basically drove it right into the forward's chest, who yeah. just brought it down and started the play forward again. So I think from a save perspective, I'm still confident and comfortable with Vargas in goal and happy with him in goal. But I still think we've got a long way to go in terms of restarting play with our goalies, because when the goalie gets the ball, the idea is that your team now has possession. Let's try to do something with it. And for the most part, we just seem to be turning it right back over to the other team. So I don't know how you guys feel about that.
I mean, you know, hey, small steps. He didn't kick it out, and he's kicking it longer. So, I mean, hey, that's a, it's a win, and let's progress into the next one.
There was one thing I did notice that he was doing, though, that was really good, is as soon as we got up a goal, he was taking his time collecting the ball and, you know, making the defense come – or making the offense come towards him before he picked it up. And he was really slowing the game down and kind of, like, stretching it out there, especially in the second half.
So I actually wanted to talk about this. This is one of my points I wanted to bring up, was the kind of, like, how – and this and you're right. I think it started even before the second half began.
As soon as we got up a goal.
Right, yeah, yeah. But I was thinking about it in particular when we were going into the second half. What would you want – the Riverhounds mentality to be like going into that second half? So you're up 2-1, you've won one game so far, you're at home, you're playing against the worst team in the league. I don't know. I mean I would want to go out and try to score another goal and kind of kill it as a competition, especially because I think we've had chances going up to it, and I wouldn't want us to try to sit on the win and try not to do anything. And I think we kind of got caught halfway between that. I think we didn't exactly know, should we go or should we stay, should we defend, you know. And so I don't know, I was actually a little worried about how Vargas was maybe taking his time a bit too much, because I'm thinking, I mean, you know, it's like the 40th minute. I mean, they get a goal and that's all for nothing. And so I mean, there's a lot of time to be played left, and I don't know how I feel about it. What do you guys think about how do you think the Riverhounds approached the second half specifically, and how would you kind of like them to approach the second half?
So Brant came out in the press conference afterwards specifically talking about the second half, because it seemed like we were sitting back more and sort of absorbing the pressure more, and mentioned that it became almost more of a counterattack style game. And he referenced the fact that ideally you want to stay on the front foot and try to get that third goal or that fourth goal. But he chalked it up to, it sounded like still trying to learn the system. And I guess the analogy he gave was, okay, you have one player who may be just a yard off from the ball, and now the ball gets played, and now it has a trickle-down effect where one player is a yard off, now the ball gets played back, now you have somebody else that maybe is a yard or 2 yards off, and you're trying to regroup and go from there. I didn't really see it, Kev. I think I saw it more in line with what you saw, where it wasn't a park the bus and let's keep it at 2-1, but it also wasn't cutthroat in the sense that the first half was much more cutthroat. We had our chances. We had plenty. I mean, this game could have been 6-1 by the end of the game, but it wasn't as clinical, I think, as in the first half.
Yeah, so I kind of see what you're saying, and I do think, you know, if this would have been our, you know, third or fourth win under Brant, then you take it to them. But the fact that we need that first win, I kind of understand being a little bit more apprehensive and, like, not going for it. Because if you go for it, you're leaving yourself vulnerable, and that's when you lose it all. And right now this team desperately needs wins just to get that confidence back up. So I'm kind of surprised they didn't park the bus more than they did. And also, we've been talking about fitness levels. Who knows what the fitness level is right now for some of the team. Vargas might have been slowing that game down because he knew his team, you know, needed the – you know, the downtime just to recoup.
That's a really good point. I redact everything I said. That was good.
I mean, so fitness levels aside, I thought that there were a number of players that I thought had the best games of the season that we've seen thus far. We've already talked about Kerr. I thought Kerr had his best game of the season. He seemed to be everywhere. Even in the second half, there was one point in particular where he slid in to tackle a ball, trapped the ball between his legs, got up and kept going again. He had no quit. He had sort of that Herzog, like, let's go and get three more together sort of mentality, which I really appreciated. I thought Boggs had a really good game. I think this was sort of what I was hoping to see out of a big body like him. He played almost like a hold up forward, but he was doing it in the midfield where he would get the ball, trap it, hold it down. There was one point where there was like three or four players around him, and he dribbled out of it just because of his sheer size. I thought he did really well. Kev, your boy Harley, I thought he came in and did really well in the second half. He covered a lot of ground. He was making some smart passes.
I love how he backs himself. He's like, even the free kick that he took wasn't that great of a free kick, but he didn't care. He was like, no, I'm putting this in the top corner.
He went for it. Yeah.
And even though he didn't, he was like, whatever, I'm going to do it next time. Like,
was it him that missed the shot at the very end, or was that Bisou? There was a ball that came across, and
I think that was him. And it was kind of like optical illusion where it kind of looked like it went in, but it didn't.
Well, no. So there was that shot that he ripped that I thought was really good. He basically stepped into what happened was the ball came across, and Nick Thompson actually was sort of out of position a little bit and just sort of flicked it with his heel. And there was about 5 or 6 yards in front of Harley to get to the ball. And you could see him just put his head down and say, I'm getting this. And he ripped it, and it looked like it was going to go in. Which was one of the things, Kev, to your point. I'm taking the shot.
Yeah.
But at the very, very end, we sort of had a breakout, and I can't remember who got the ball on the right side, and they crossed it, and he was sort of all alone, and he sort of, I don't know if he tripped or what, but flubbed it wide right. I think it may have been him. But I think, aside from that, that's forgivable. Considering the rest of the game that I saw, I think those three guys in particular, you know, aside from the other ones we've already talked about, Hunt and Herzog and all of that, I think all of those performances give me hope for the future as well. Because if we have guys that can come in as subs like that and make impacts like that, we didn't even talk about the fact that Hollingsworth was back. I thought that was pretty.
Yeah, Hollingsworth actually did pretty good when he at the beginning of the game. It was, you know, one of those things where you just realize, like, oh, we haven't had him in a month. Like, wow, yeah. Okay, I forgot he was even a part of it and was still on loan to us.
Yeah, and it's one of those things where we've seen in Brandt's system that he likes to get the backs forward. And so once you see that Hollingsworth's back and you see that we put Willie Hunt over there, and especially early on when Hunt's driving up the field, it's like, wow, if we have both of those guys sort of pressing up and getting back, this could be dangerous/entertaining to watch.
I thought Brandt actually had a good game in the sense of how he set up. I was surprised at the Hunt at right back call, but I thought it worked out really well. I think the previous three games we've seen under Brandt, it seems like we've been playing a very high line and pressing hard. For me, in this game, it seemed like we dropped back deeper, didn't put as much pressure on their back four, and almost kind of invited them onto us. And I think we were even doing that before we went up, so I don't think it was a reaction to how the game was going. And so, if that is the case, I mean, I thought all the calls he made in this game worked out really well, even though they weren't necessarily obvious. So that was kind of hopeful for me. That was just one thing I wanted to bring up. I was shocked at how deep we were sitting, actually, and just kind of letting their center backs have the ball and say, yeah, like, bring it. And which is, I think, a bit counterintuitive, and it kind of makes sense. Like, okay, if Montreal, they're at the bottom of the table for a reason. You're not gonna bet on them cutting through your defense, right? So let's just make it really difficult for them to do that, rather than kind of allow for the opportunity of we getting caught out of position and blah 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 and all that kind of stuff.
I was thinking about this, and I'm trying to break down in my mind over the past few games, like, what is Dave Brandt soccer? Like, we've seen a lot of flashes of little things here and there, but what is this system that we're looking at? What is he trying to teach? And I think, I could be completely wrong, but what made me think this was actually Vargas and all of the long balls that he keeps playing over the top, is I think that the system is basically get the ball as deep as you can, as quickly as you can, but with numbers, and then see what happens. Because I think when you see the guys get up the field quickly, that's when you start to see some of the creative 1, 2, 3 touches, and you just sort of see what sort of magic happens. If you're just getting the ball deep and we don't have numbers, there's nothing. But it's when we're able to, if our defense gets the ball and we systematically move forward and just get as many numbers up as we can, that's when you start to see sort of the interplay and people try to work stuff out. And I think the quickest route for us and what we've been trying to do is get the ball as deep as we can with our wide backs.
Mm-hmm.
And have that be the catalyst to get them deep, now get everybody else pushed up with them, and now they have options, and then let's see what happens.
Well, he's always been saying vertical passing. Yeah. I mean, that's exactly that. Just the passing forward up the field, and instead of just kind of like playing with it back in the back half, just getting up there and see what happens.
Yeah. Well, we've talked about a ton.
That was a lot.
And we're like 40 minutes in. Is there anything else you guys wanted to talk about? I was going to throw out man of the match. Are there any other takeaways before we put out our man of the match?
Real quick, the head-to-head collision that we had at the very end there. I don't know if you guys could see it as well, or you know they showed it as well on the playback, but being there right on that, you know, half and seeing it, that looked terrible. And I can't believe Campbell stayed in afterwards. I don't know if you guys know this or not, but do USL, do they have the same rules that other leagues do where they have to do the concussion test to make sure they're okay before they put them back on?
So it looked like, the incident in question, what happened was there was a ball that came up. Again, it was sort of Nick Thompson it was sort of a weak clearance. And Campbell and Laparre, went up and basically smacked heads. And they both came down hard. It looked like there was, like, Laparre had a gash on his head and
there was
some
a lot
blood.
Of blood.
And Campbell was on the ground. And I don't know if this was, he was almost convulsing, like his arms and legs were shaking, which was really kind of, I don't know if he was out, what it was, but immediately they came out. It seemed like there was 5 or 6 minutes that they were tending to both of them. But as they both got up to walk off, the general assumption was they were both done for the night.
Mm-hmm.
And they sort of stopped midfield with Campbell, and you could see one of the trainers is sort of doing, not like the drunk test, but sort of like, you know, follow my finger sort of thing, and was doing a few quick checks. And then the next thing you know, Campbell's on the sideline getting ready to come back into the game.
Which is nuts. I mean, like, because
there was only, at that point, there was like 5 minutes left in the, not counting stoppage time. There, it was only 5 minutes left.
And
in
we
the
still
game.
Had a sub left, I'm pretty sure, up to that
point. Yeah,
we still had a sub left.
I didn't study medicine or biology or whatever. So I'm putting trust into our physios, but that was nuts. I mean, seeing that on the stream, yeah, you're right. I mean, it shakes you. Like, I can't imagine what it was like to be there and actually see that happen in front of your eyes, like, let alone on the stream. And
yeah, he looked like he was convulsing in pain, like, right when he came down, like, shaking in pain. It's like, oh, he's off. Like, they're both off.
Oh, I didn't want it. Yeah, I didn't want him to come back on. Take care of yourself. Get off and don't, like, have a long-term injury or something. I mean, he came back on and that first, like, he made that first header in 30 seconds after. I was like, oh god, don't head the ball. But that was nuts.
Yeah, there was some complaints from other people I saw on Twitter and everything and stuff, like saying like there's no way he should have came back on, which I don't know. Like you said, I'm not a doctor. I don't know. They looked like they did a concussion test and he passed, so I guess he's okay. But yeah, I just, if nothing else, that shows you that Campbell is, you know, he's not going to come off unless they make him.
He is a tough dude.
Hey, I thought he had another really good game this game.
Yeah.
No, it's an interesting point. Let's let's do this. Man of the match. Who wants to go first? Kevin, I want you to say Kevin Kerr.
Kevin Kerr.
Make you go first.
No, I was genuinely thinking
saying
him.
Say it.
I was genuinely thinking about giving it to Kevin Kerr. I think this was one of the first games of the season where he showed me every part of his game really well. Mm-hmm. So he was hitting these long passes, pinging these long passes right to feet. He was getting in there, scrapping up, making tackles, winning the ball back, popping up with a goal, popping up with an assist. I think he had a really strong all around performance, and that's Kevin Kerr, man of the match for this guy.
Josh, do you
I
agree?
Was actually going to say Kevin Kerr as well. We talk about what we want to see from this Pittsburgh team, what kind of mentality we want them to have, the workhorse mentality, and I feel like Kevin Kerr showed that in this game completely. He was the workhorse, he was all over, he was doing great passing, like, across the whole field, the length of the field. There was a couple where he just spot on, just passed it all the way across the field in right in front of the other people. So I think we had his best game of the season so far.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, I agree. I was gonna say, like, oh, I'll pick somebody else, because there's a number of guys that I think it could go to, but I wholeheartedly agree. Like I said, I think this was Kerr's best game. I think this was a bit of a statement game for him. I was starting to wonder if it's clear he has talent, but I was starting to wonder if last year wasn't more successful because of Robbie Vincent and sort of the relationship that they had, and they could sort of play off each other more. And without him, he was sort of like the sum is better than the individual parts. But I think this game in particular, and there were some comments made after the game as well from some of the players about his work rate. And when you see somebody who just isn't quitting and hustling, that makes them want to elevate their game even more. And the fact that he got the goal and the assist, and you could see that him and Herzog in particular were both, you know, just relishing the fact that they were able to put those goals away together. And yeah, I think it's the captain's game. And so, you know, kudos to you, Kevin. I know that Corey won the man of the match as voted on by people on Twitter, but I think that they're both somewhat equally deserving of man of the match honors, as well as some of the other guys.
There was a lot of players actually that did great this game. I almost even thought about giving to Jack Thompson.
Yeah.
Yeah, he came to mind. Willie Hunt came to mind. Yeah, I think overall it was a good performance. We'll have to see if it carries forward. Obviously, next time we play is going to be against Rochester, in Rochester. So a bit of a different game and atmosphere than what we saw this week. We'll be away from home. The game, I think, is at 6:05, which feels like the start of a baseball game. But that will be on YouTube, so make sure everybody check it out. Kevin and I will have the preview show midweek. We're going to see if we can get either Nick Thompson or Josh. You said Willie wants to come on the show. Willie, we want to have you on the show. Trust me. So we keep asking. So we need to make that happen as well.
Yeah, definitely.
And so we'll see what we can do. Otherwise, yeah, man, go Hounds. Great job this week. Anything else, guys?
Two wins.
It feels weird, and I don't know if we talked about it yet this episode, but you know my three game, you know,
yeah. you're the sage, Josh. The sage.
I'm just saying, I gave him three games. And then this is the fourth.
Look,
he showed up.
The pieces together, people. Josh becomes a regular. He says, "Coach has three games. We start winning on the fourth game." Just saying.
If we don't lose another game this season, I'm just walking out. I'm stopping because obviously I'm that bad, and you're that good.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. All right. Well, again, thanks, everybody. Hounds, great job this week. Let's keep the ball rolling, and we'll talk to you all very, very soon.
Cheers.
Go Hounds.